This is so exciting. Wow, where to begin?
It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Trey, a.k.a. AsherCon Zelo. Pants on the ground, pants on the ground, looking like a fool with pants on the ground.
And this is Shauna, a.k.a. Cat Dragon, wondering whether I should be just popping the top off of a night, if only to keep Trey from singing.
And this is David, a.k.a. David the Sex, and I'm just here.
And you're just here?
I'm just here.
In your closet?
I have no witty comment. Yes, I am in a closet.
And you're listening to the only, the original Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Hey, and this is episode 123. 123.
Wow. Number? This is... Are you going to go high, or am I supposed to go low on three, or... Oh, no, wait. That's something else entirely different. Sorry.
Hey, in this episode, we're going to grind on some news, talk about some upcoming... maybe talk about an upcoming contest event idea. And then we're going to present part one of the good, the bad, and the ugly persistent roundtable that Striker B did several weeks ago.
Oh, this is the one about the persistent worlds, isn't it?
Yes. So it should be interesting.
Ooh. Are they naming names?
I don't think so.
Good, because I'd hate to think that...
That was one of the rules.
I'd hate to think that my persistent world was in there. But, well, have we talked about what the purpose of that roundtable was? Where, you know, they're not naming names.
Right.
But what they're naming is
the good things, the bad things, and the ugly things
that happen
that you can find on any of the persistent worlds.
And I would assume that wouldn't make any difference whether it was Neverwinter Nights 1 or Neverwinter Nights 2.
Right. I believe they had people from both sides of the house, so
that's good. But, you know, a lot of times people put so much work into their persistent worlds that they kind of get tunnel vision. And they don't know what's right. They don't know what's wrong. All they know is they've got people moving a lot. If some of this strikes home to any of the listeners, either for the better or for the worse, then this is going to be a very worthwhile thing.
I'm looking forward to hearing it.
I am too, because you all know that I've got my own persistent world, and so sometimes I'm one of those people with tunnel vision. So I'm looking forward to hearing tips and, you know, see whether we're committing any of the good, the bad, or the ugly.
I think the Action Murderer joined them on that round table, as well as a couple of guys from Realms of Trinity who we've had on the show a couple of times. So it should be interesting.
That's great.
This is part one.
Yeah. They recorded like 2.5 hours of material, so we're gonna have a part one and a part two. So this episode and next episode.
Sounds good.
That's great. I'm looking forward to it. And boy, do we sound thrilled about it.
Hey, we're just kind of laid back tonight.
Tonight we're laid back, and some of us are in. And some of us are in a closet, so yeah. It's okay. It's all right.
There's plenty of room. It's a walk-in closet.
Oh, well, in which case then, we'll just, you know, we got lots of room to be laid back here.
All right, so before we bust onto some news, I'm going to play a voicemail that we received from FFBJ, or a.k.a. Robert Crawford, one of our constant listeners.
Yeah, hi, that's us, FFBJ. I was thinking on the PW, maybe I could run you guys again sometime, with Skype up. And And, you know, just a thought. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, so I think that is, you know, in the last episode we talked about maybe coming up with a contest, some contest events to have, like we used to do.
Right.
Last year sometime, or the first year of the podcast. So that now makes three offers we've had. So the first offer was you, Cat
yes.
Dragonstar, in your persistent world. The other one was Realms of Trinity, and then now FFBJ is invited us. So I think we should take all three of you up on it and get those scheduled, maybe one at a time. So I think I'd like...
That's right, as opposed to all three of us.
Yeah. Sometimes I ramble, sorry. So with that said, what do you think about being the first one? And we can have an event at your place first.
Well, but I can do that. I've got some rather clever little places that we could do. I'll kick that around.
Now, I'm sorry. I know I played on yours way back when we interviewed you the first time. But yours is the NWN1, correct?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And then Realms of Trinity is 2.
Right, and then I think FFBJ is 1. So we probably should find a fourth one and kind of balance it out. Because last time the events were all NWN1, and I'd like to do some more NWN2 stuff.
That would mean I'd have to actually play NWN2.
You don't have it?
Well, no, I've got it. I just haven't played it. I've got it on my machine.
Well, you wouldn't have to play it. You would just have it installed so that you could get on whatever persistent world.
Right. And I can follow along with a microphone in my hand going, and we're following Trey and whoever else shows up as they sneak through the through the tunnels.
Except my name wouldn't be Trey.
Well, that's
I'm
right.
I'm a scene reporter.
Yeah. I could be the roving reporter. The roving dragon reporter. Ooh.
Okay, so do you want to host the first one?
Yeah, we'll host the first one. And
I would assume we want to do it on a Saturday, right?
Right, yeah, because we're looking at something like 4 hours, right?
Or a Friday night.
Right, we'd do a Friday night.
I like Friday nights.
Yeah, Friday nights would be good.
We're old. We don't have dates anymore.
My husband...
I'm sorry. What was that, David?
I said I'm game for whenever.
Okay.
Well, my husband doesn't let me go on dates anymore, so it's...
So do you think you could round up some DMs?
I'm sure
Skunk would love to DM with you.
I'm sure he would. And that would just be talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly.
So here's what we'll do. I mean, if you want to start thinking about it and then let us know... Let us know, and then we can set a date, and then we'll announce it.
Okay. Let me kick it around, and we can – I'll kick it around with my – I'll talk to my folks, and then we'll get back to your folks.
And I'm going to throw in a shirt for the winner. You are gonna pick a best role player winner out of whoever plays.
Oh, well, that'll be fun.
How's that sound?
I like it.
And we'll give them a podcast T-shirt.
Yay!
Or I got a better idea. You could put up your sword.
I don't think so.
whoever wins your shiny sword.
I don't think so.
Darn.
However, I will throw in.
Didn't work.
I will throw in a mouse pad that says Sojourney DMs do it on the run.
Okay, cool. So.
Or whatever the hell it says.
So we could do a first place and a second place.
That's right. That's right.
And if we had a third prize, we could do third place. Maybe somebody will come up with something else.
That's right.
Or, hey, okay, first place could be the sword.
No! Second place. No, my shiny is mine. Mine, all mine.
That's funny. I knew that's how you're going to react.
Are there any rules for what types of characters people need to bring? Or?
Right.
She'll probably have to think about all that and then let us know, right?
Yeah, and we'll figure out, you know.
It should be open to anybody, right?
Right, it should be open. It'd be open to anybody. And since marvelous DMs exist, we'll wing it on the spot. on the moment.
I mean, you can do whatever you want. If you want to create a little mini story that is the event, we can do that. Or if you want to just go on the fly, whatever.
We'll come up with something. We'll set the standard.
Okay.
And that may be good or that may be bad.
Cool. So everybody look forward to that. Okay, on to the news. At the top of the news is the 2009 cycle for the Golden Dragon Awards. Taipei tells us that has started and is in full swing. And actually, not the next episode, but the episode after that, we're going to have Taipei and the Dragon Awards on the show again, and he's going to tell us all about the 2009 cycle. That sound good?
It sounds great. And, we will be posting the link up to their forums. And I highly, strongly, urgently urge people who, if you think that you have got the time and would be interested in being in something in this, it is an enormous task that they go through every year to narrow things down and come up with the winners. And they need all the help they can get. So, you can do as little as you want or as much as you want, and the more that you do, the better off that they will like it. I'm not going to, lie to you and tell you that it's not time-consuming, but it's a very well-worth project that the community has responded to and liked, and they really need the help. I can't, strongly urge that enough.
I think you've convinced me to look into it.
And news from Superfly, he tells us that the Nordoc Genesis NWN 1 Persistent World has been reborn again. They've got their own site up, and we'll be posting the link there too. And Trey, didn't you make a note that you started out with Nordoc?
Oh yeah, I cut my teeth on Nordoc. That's the.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
I remember hearing you talk about that at the beginning of the podcast. Wasn't that how you got started?
Yeah, that's how one of our buddies got us started. Was we put up a private Nordoc server, and it was just three or four of us. Jay was one of them. Jay and myself and Kenny and another guy named Kevin. So anytime three or four of us would be on there, that's how I learned about Neverwinter Nights and started playing it. And then I bought it to play it. Then I started playing through the, original campaigns and all that stuff. And here I am today, in the middle of NWN2 Storm of the Seer. Whee! So go check it out.
Bouncy Rock has finally released Misery Stone, much anticipated module.
Yeah, I think everybody's been waiting for that one to come out.
Well, so far 26 votes on the vault, and it's a score of 10. So
wow.
It's like even looking through the feedback, seems there's been a few bugs encountered, but a patch is promised, and very positive feedback, looks like.
Cool.
Awesome, phenomenal, all kinds of positive feedback. So it's glad to see that finally come out.
Also, our last bit of news before we get to the roundtable. The NeverEndingNights.com has got a new website, and they're all over Twitter and Facebook land these days. And I hear that they're working on Season 3. So, and if you don't know what that is, and we've had them on our show a couple episodes ago, they do NWN1 Machinima videos, and it's called NeverEnding Nights. And it's actually pretty slick. You should check it out.
It is. It's pretty amazing and very funny, too,
yes.
On top of it.
And so they're working on Season 3 as we speak.
Cool.
Okay, and now to the roundtable.
Okay. Who wants to go first? Don't be shy.
Hi, I'm Tony, a.k.a. Spool32.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian.
Hey, this is Axe, a.k.a. Axe Murderer.
Okay. Uh, it. We have to start the show now. I have to start. Stupid computer broke. The funny thing is, I had to format it 6 times before it actually started working properly.
That's horrible.
You have no idea.
I don't. Partially.
I work in the industry. Yeah.
So do
yeah.
I.
It's happened to me 1,000 times. I know exactly what you mean.
Okay. So, this is Tracker B. We are here for the show The Bad, the Ugly of the PVs. And we have here, as we said with us, Ex-Murderers, Pool, 32, Brian, and Kamaza will join us later. Well, let's start with this show. We thought about this idea after the post that Axe started, the short post that everyone enjoyed to read, the very, very short, on our forums. So, Axe, why don't you start with the... Why did you start it with post, and what brought you to the thought about the...
Okay, I can do that. Well, the reason I wrote it was I haven't been playing Neverwinter Nights for a while. I was kind of doing some building and stuff. So, oh, look who just showed up.
Yeah.
So I decided to go out. You know, I haven't played in maybe, I don't know, 7-8 months. So I decided to go out and look around for a place I'd never been to before, to see how the worlds have progressed in the time I haven't been playing. And when I went out there, I went to several different places. I mean, I spent literally about 5 hours surveying different servers that were up at the time. I just did the ones on the GameSpy. And, you know, I was kind of disheartened in what I found. So I started that post to complain about it to somebody. Or everybody, I guess.
Oh. Did everyone had such experience before? Everyone in this room? Or just most of you playing on your own PVs?
Did everybody here read that post?
I
read
did.
That.
I had to.
It
actually interested me as I used to build models myself in the past. Modules. So... Guys?
Yeah, well, I've read the post. I actually had posted a small response to Axe as one of his first posts out there. And, yeah, I've had a similar experience, too, more so with Neverwinter Nights 2 than 1. What sort of prompted us to build our server was the fact that there really wasn't a lot of quality stuff out there and very restrictive and very stuff not really developed for the players. It was more like for the builders, and you know, they were more concerned about it. At the time, though, I mean, this is 2008 when we started building ROT, and there really wasn't too much out there. And we played on about maybe 10 to 12 servers at the time, and you know, I shared Axe's experience and you know his thoughts about a lot of the stuff.
You know, it wasn't like I found a bunch of crappy servers. I mean, they were good servers, but most of them just had things in them that made it annoying to play them. I mean, you know, that there wasn't anything broken. Didn't look bad. You know, the maps were really good. But there was some rule set or some annoying thing that was in my face the whole time that I couldn't put up with. So I just left most of them. And it was, like I said, it was kind of disheartening because I sort of expected to find at least one or two around that would be, you know, I would keep my attention for more than an hour or so.
Yeah.
And I just didn't
some
find
of that's going to be individual styles, though.
Sure, always is, no question about it.
There, especially when you're talking about rule sets, there's a lot of people have rules on their server because of issues they've had. I know that on Avalis we have every rule we have comes about or came about because of some problem that we have with a player, something we had to solve.
Right. Well, there's rule sets dealing with that, and then there's rule sets for like basic things like resting and
oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, just area design. Like, if I walk into another area that is so loaded down with chairs that nobody is sitting in, that I can't even walk across the area without bumping into 10 or 12. I mean, every single server that I go out there, you know, that's an area design issue. You know, you don't need 2,000 chairs in the area. You need, like, 5, and that's it. Because nobody...
And it needs to be much smaller.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
They get in the way.
Tavern is at maximum, I learned, is have to be 4-on-4 with four chairs per table, or maximum 5. And it's four tables maximum. Well, 3 if you can get in the counter of the barman. That's what I used to do in one of my modules. I had one small inn, three tables I placed in, 4 chairs on each side, small, compact, and people don't need to walk 5 miles to get to from one spot to another.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wrote about that one few. I was writing about that one feud plane thing.
That is. There's some breathing really going on
bad.
There.
I was getting some really bad echo there.
Yep.
Well, okay.
And yeah, I found the same thing. There was a fugue plane area, and there were, it wasn't just one map, it was actually 2 maps that you had to walk across to get out. And it was huge.
I think I was at that same world.
It was just gigantic.
I played the same world. I don't know if it's the same, but it has the same thing. A map which will go for like 5 or 6. Well, 2 or 3 minutes just to find the way out. And 1 minute if you are already were at least once or twice.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the feud plane is it's not an area that has anything you can do in it. So it's not a fun area to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a temporary holding ground. Right. As a builder, you should be trying to get your players out of there and back into the module as soon as you can. And if you don't, they're going to leave.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
It's realistic to be stuck in fugue for a while if you die to make dying mean something. But it's not fun.
Yeah,
and if you want players to have fun, you don't want to incorporate a rule like that makes them sit around for 5 minutes doing nothing. You know,
well, it's not the way to make death fun. To make it tedious.
Yeah, annoying.
If you have to find ways to make death suck without making it suck for the person.
Exactly.
You
could give them something to do while they're in fugue. That's
a solution
right there. You know, they can't be in the party with everybody, but they're not sitting around watching their tune stand there.
Do a little quest to get out or something else, or have a couple of NPCs to interact with, or
maybe you have
go
to
smoke
put
a bowl.
An arena up there and you know, make them fight through like 4 or 5 monsters to get out.
Yeah. I know the way we do it is, and we have some death areas that are worse than others. We break it out based on alignment, and you do end up having to complete some kind of a quest, whether it's killing demons or finding the right lever to pull or collecting flowers to stick on an altar or something like that in order to get out.
That's a good idea. I used to put a gate out or a permanent death angel. You walk up to him, he will destroy your soul and everything.
Yeah, definitely area design is important. I mean, when you're designing your persistent world or developers designing the areas and trying to minimize as much aggravation and wasted time for the players. I mean, there's, you know, obviously if you have a big long run, you don't want to, I mean, it's, you know, you're going to have a big long run, but it has to have purpose. You know, if you're making somebody walk across, you know, 20 areas just to get somewhere that they may go and, you know, get busted up and have to respawn back at the beginning 2 seconds later, you know, and then you have to run 20 areas again to get back to the place. I mean, that's bad design probably. You know, there's a, if with proper use of world maps, you know, with NWN2 at least, you have world maps and proper use of that and how you design your areas from a holistic point of view, like when you map out your zones and stuff and you actually have a nice flow chart of how the zones go and how many hops it is to get from point A to point C, B. You know, if you can minimize that, that's always the best way to go for the server and for your players because they won't get frustrated continuously spawning across the God's creation.
Well, I don't know. Part of the adventure was for me is walking with the group or solo to the place. Well, I do not expect to find a good monster or a good place to adventure if I stand in it close to the city. It cannot be done if it will be close to the city. I don't think so.
Yeah, I go along with that. I'm not opposed to walking distances. I actually prefer walking rather than porting because it makes you learn the map.
Yeah.
And where everything goes, and that's one of the things I enjoy about playing is discovering the map and where everything goes.
It also gives you more room as a DM to create events. That's I guess my largest complaint with NWN2 is just simply the fact that your areas get stale after a while. It's nice to be able to spread out over 6 or 8 or 9 areas as your party is chasing a group of monsters or fighting a long-running battle and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I used to spread my cities about 4 or 2 areas at least. So for the people, I think everybody who here is builder and did the same thing. If he builds a city and sewer system underneath, and he will spread it out to the outer city and so on, it's just so people could adventure, find places, talk to the NPCs, finding some small quests. That's what I call the good level design of the module. Need to find a place where a player can find the story of the world without, with limited access to the DM around. I mean, you can find the story not just from the forums, even on the module itself.
Yeah.
You could get it. You can get the story done without any problem.
Of course, in a PW, the story, and I don't know if the story is one of the main draws to the place. I mean, it's certainly good to have a good story, but in a PW, if you don't have a DM sitting there morphing the story around, then
of course, the DM is part of the story. I do not mean with the scripts as much as they good as they can could replace the DM. DM is only well to advance the story and the plot every day, every time he around. That the current plot with its present should be known to the players at least who wants to find out it about it.
Mm.
That's what I mean. I used to have players who come to my server and say, we couldn't find a place or story or line beside the forums where can that will tell them that this has this the bad guys, with the good guys, with the neutrals, and so on. We just couldn't realize between the first the two or three cities you play between.
Can anybody hear me?
Yeah.
I can. Yes.
Okay. Excellent. This is Calm. I'm sorry. I kind of jumped in here late. Had to pick up my kid from school.
No problem.
I was just catching that last little bit about, you know, when a player joins a world and they're having trouble finding their way around when they first get started. What we found on Realms of Trinity is, you know, we have, you know, right when you come into town, when you join the world, we got the first major NPC who outlines, you know, the first handful of your quests. And, you know, the biggest problem we see isn't for, you know, people that can't figure it out. It's they would rather it be hand-fed to them instead of exploring half the time.
I've seen that the problem as well.
So, you know, we have to try and find a balance where we give enough information to spell it out, but without making it boring for the people who do like to explore and figure things out on their own.
Yeah, I think we kind of go the other way in that we've built our servers to have a specific setting and a flavor to them. You know, there are, you know, quests to do and little FedEx things to run around and pick up or smaller, you know, help me pick the wheat, whatever, as you get into the, as you're going through the low levels. But we don't give a whole lot of direction with NPCs in the module. Most of it is kind of ambient. They'll make comments about world situations, but there isn't any sort of, hi, I'm the guy who's going to tell you what's happening in the world here. That really ends up being forums and wiki and player interaction. I think that's a really big part of it for us anyway, is that requirement that you meet other players and talk to them to see what's going on.
Okay. Well,
for me, that kind of stuff for me is really not a big deal. I mean, either way you do it, I don't mind playing on a world that does it the first way or the second way. If you want to have a guy that tells me where everything is, you know, and he fits in the storyline, that's fine. What Spool was saying, and make them kind of force your players to look around and interact more, that's fine too. You know, you have the choice to do either one, as long as it's not something that breaks the game. I don't know. I've never run a PW, so I can't tell you.
Split it. You know, we have the main run of quests that, you know, follow the storyline for the character progression. And, you know, there's just a couple NPCs that the story trades from one to the next as you progress. But then we have side quests in areas that are not specific to the main story. And if you don't hunt for them on your own, you don't find them.
Is that how you do it in a persistent world? Or is that a single-player module?
This is a persistent world.
FPV, yes.
I wonder what, how does that work for, I guess you guys are I'm trying to figure out how to ask this. I guess there's one specific sort of overarching setting that drives all of the plot and the stories.
Yes, the entire Realms of Trinity, it's all based on, it's like if you played the original campaign for Neverwinter Nights 2 or even Neverwinter Nights 1,
right,
where you have an overarching story. And that's what drives your main progression through. It actually acts like a single player mod, but for multiplayers.
What happens when the story is over?
We have a second actual campaign. We're under progression right now, developing.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Now, see, for me, when I get to that point where I've gone through it, that's when I either change characters, you know, make a new guy up, or switch to a different server.
Yeah.
Usually.
I usually never make a second character. I always stick with one character I make.
The whole time.
Yes.
Even when you're done with the whole thing.
That's really interesting, because we don't have like a single storyline in the Avalis world at all that drives that. Although, like, it's, we've been up for a really long time now, so we're kind of on our maybe fourth or fifth large thing that's happening in the world. But there are always a number of other smaller storylines or many 4 or 5 event arcs and other things that are happening. But we try to create a world setting and then let the DM populate it with stuff that's going on. And while we drive everyone along a central theme, when it's over, the world is still there according to, you know, whatever changes have happened. And then we kind of move on to the next large thread.
Well, there's supposed to be a main plot, subplots, and several plots that the DM do just for the fun of it, not entirely world-changing. It's everything that's to make the players sort of say happy, just so they could enjoy their stay every day, or every week, or every so often. That you can agree with me, Spool, that there have to be a main plan for plot for the world to keep going. I think everybody here have to agree with that.
I think you're right. Yes, I mean, as I think about it, I suppose we have kind of organically gone that direction without even really intending to, and it might even be useful as a staff for us to refocus ourselves a little more towards actually getting some unity on the main plot line or the main thing that's happening in the world right now.
It can be several things which are happening, but it should be connected to one thing. I don't know.
I'm agreeing with you on this. I am. Yeah, I just hadn't really thought about it in that structured way. But I guess we do that.
Main plot, substructures, and so on.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we did when we have the main plot. We have the side plots, but we do have, it's another thing too, and this is something we do as well, and Comet does a lot of this, is we have a lot of areas that are, that we have, like they're kind of in between places. We have a lot of areas. We have about 300 areas on our server, and not all of them are, used in the plot. They're side plot areas and things like that. Well, what Comet does is he actually, as a DM, sets up things using the DMFI and the DM utilities to set up dynamic situations for the players to go through, the DM events, where you have other side plots that are dynamic that actually change the persistent world as we go. We do have this stuff that's built into the module programmed and scripted and everything like that, but we also do have a nice series of role-playing events that we, do dynamic work with.
Right, of course. That's kind of like the bread and butter of being what your staff is doing.
Yep.
I mean, Neverwinter 2 does present some problems for trying to keep a world highly dynamic. I mean, building alone takes 4 to 5 times as long as it did in Neverwinter 1. So, I mean, making changes, on a weekly basis to interact with how the players are changing the world. I mean, we get caught up to the point where we'd be building all the time and never have the time to run the events.
Good point.
So, some of it has to be, some areas have to remain static so that we can focus on, little DM-driven plot lines and stories that bring about change to the environment. That way we as the builders and staff have time to keep up with it.
And that's the reason for something we're just doing now. As a matter of fact, the end of the month, we're rolling out a big update where I just installed the MySQL server, and I'm running everything off of MySQL database now. I finally got out of the Stone Ages and actually upgraded what we did. And I'm going to be driving all of our spawners and all of our configuration from a database. And right now I'm working on a Windows application that's going to be running on a scheduler. It's going to go through all the spawners that I marked dynamic and change them to what they spawn in, the amount of stuff they spawn in, how much gold, items, and all kind of crap. It actually does it every so many hours so that players can realistically go through and come across totally different encounters, totally different things. But obviously for level appropriateness, you wouldn't walk through one day and all of a sudden you have to fight some kind of epic demon or something or whatever. But, that kind of structure is really going to help us out, too, to save us time as far as having to change stuff all the time and keeping players feeling like, oh, this is fresh. I'm going through this area, and I don't know if I'm going to come across a group of goblins or I'm going to come across a bunch of bands just trying to steal my money.
Yeah.
Is that for one, or for version one or two?
Two. Two. It's yeah. Neverwinter Nights 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
For one, it already exists, I think. I have seen several servers that use it. I used to, okay. We have some question. We have some topics that Trey asked me to pick out. I think we covered most of them right now, but let's see. The first one I would like to talk about, well, how does the balance between the creative building and the storytelling in a PV server should work? Because I've seen servers that look awesome, but the story, well, there is no story. Any thoughts?
Well, I mean,
go ahead.
For us, the task of keeping the modules updated to reflect changes that we have according to different plots and different stories that are going on, we're able, because of the systems we have in place and because of the number of people that we've got, we're able to do a lot of mini changes that go in as the modules get updated, and that's nice for us to be able to reflect things that players have done in the world, but you definitely do have to strike a balance between, like you guys said, building all the time and running events all the time. And I guess part of being a DM is being able to create events and do things that don't level the village or burn down the forest or whatever else, so that it requires a module or breaks people's sense of immersion. You have to be able to craft events that happen inside the world that feel dynamic, that don't actually change the physical areas that often. And that kind of cuts down on your builder's needs to do a lot of work, especially for us, because we do have a huge amount of space and a lot of maintenance that goes on. We're 9 servers and 2,800, 3,000 areas, something like that. So it's a lot of volume to try and manage.
Something that big is pretty hard to take care of. When you're that big, you know, you probably have more than one story going on in there somewhere.
Yeah,
certainly for some of the players, they have different experiences than other groups would, because it's such a big server.
It's absolutely true, and it's a great effort to try and put together a story that touches all the players. You really have to push the events along and spread out and make things happen in a very large way in order to try and affect everyone. The current war that we're running across most of the servers right now, that's been one of our main goals, is to do something where for every single character that logs in, whether or not they actually get involved in the war, join one of the armies, or do any fighting or anything else, to put the plot line together such that you have to have an opinion. Even if your opinion is, I'm not interested in that, I'm staying away from it. We're really trying to make it such that it affects everybody, so that no one ends up not knowing what happened.
So your attitude is that if you have two different groups of people and they're completely separated in the world, they should still experience some of the same things.
Yeah, we want them to have some shared history, yes.
And more importantly, you think it's bad if they don't?
I think it can be, partly because it kind of fragments the community.
And you think that's a bad thing?
I think that some diversity is really important, but I would like to be able to touch everybody in some way. Of course, this happens across 3 different nations and And so lots of different groups of characters are going to have different opinions about how it affects them. But we're really trying to create world situations where everybody has to have some kind of an opinion. Even if that opinion is, I'm moving to the caves of Deglos and I'm hiding from all of this war and to heck with you guys.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of work in a server that page to me.
Welcome to the DM world.
Personally, I think that's really cool that you do that, and it's something that's a good option to have, but I don't think it's a requirement. You know, I don't think that something like that would make or break a world as a good world or a bad world.
I agree.
You know, I think it's perfectly legitimate to have a world that has no main storyline and is just comprised of like hundreds of quests. You know, it's fun to play in a group that of people and go on a server like that and just play a bunch of quests, you know, without having or making up your own main storyline is what you usually end up doing in those situations. So you can have a good server and still not have all that story stuff imposed on your players. It's really what you're doing is you're imposing it on your players, which you think is a good thing, and I don't disagree with that. I mean, it's like I said, it's a good option to have, but I don't think that's a requirement for a good world or a bad world. I wouldn't rate a world based on something like that, personally.
Yeah, I have to agree with X on that one. I mean, I've played on worlds where you have to be involved to basically do anything, and I've also played on worlds where, you know, you're just, here's the world, run, have fun, make it up as you go. And I've had equal fun in both types of situations.
I think we're trying to strike a balance between the two, where you don't have to participate in what's going on, but we really are trying to make sure that everyone knows that it is going on.
Yeah.
And like I said, even if your opinion is, I want to be uninvolved with this.
That's a really good strategy, in my opinion. That's a good strategy because you're supporting more different types of players, which is what makes a persistent world really good, are the ones that support the more of the player base.
Exactly. I can't agree with you more, Axe. The fact is that, I mean, a large part of our success was simply that, where we, you know, we split up. We didn't split, but we made the server to accommodate not just, like you said, the campaign stuff. We had the side stuff, but also from player styles. There's a lot of different player styles out there too. There's people who like to hack and slash and be, you know, power builders and, you know, max and min-maxers. And there's people who like to, you know, role play and get their experience through, you know, role play interactions with other players in a more of a slow and low magic progression. And, you know, what we have found is that if you build the server in the such, not just the story versus non-story, but you give people who like the min and max challenges that, you know, hey, if you want to go there, you full well know that you might get your head smashed in, but that they might actually want to do that because they want to min max and stay, you know, interested in doing stuff like that. But other players might not be that advantageous. They might want to have an average build, or they're not, you know, they're just casual Neverwinter Nights players who just want to get in and have some fun, and they don't want to walk into a place to get their head smashed in. So, you know, the more you build your server to, like, leave things to be more optional, like, you have your standard stuff, but you have optional things that they can do. Like, if you want to have a nice, fun, you know, role-playing side quest, great, there it is. If you want a hard-nosed min-max quest, there it is as well, so that you accommodate for both players.
Yeah, I can tell you, for myself, sometimes I don't have a lot of time to play. You know, I have like maybe an hour or two to play, so I really can't get into a big long thing. So it's nice to, I'll change my playing style based on how much time I have to play. You know, I'll go for a hack and slash session for maybe 2 hours, but if I have like a 6 hour session, I might be more into getting together with a group and going role playing and doing something else in the server.
Exactly.
That is a really, really tough thing to balance.
It is.
Because the more active people get, the more involved they get in plots, and the more they kind of want to do that plot stuff. And a lot of plot things are driven by role play. And So it's really hard to not freeze out your players who are in there casually for a two-hour dungeon crawl, but never end up touching your plots, even though they want to.
Or you do it a different day.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll see a plot, but I won't do it. I'll just, mark it down. Oh, yeah, when I get more time, I'm going to come back and do that one.
That's going on, yeah.
You know, if you make the front of it look interesting.
One of the things you can do is have some of your DM staff be dedicated to running smaller one-off events, so that you can get people who are in there casually and they get grabbed by a DM for a two-hour session or one small little thing that ends at the end of the evening.
Oh, I do that all the time. I call them hit and run events.
Yes.
Or, I'm just scanning through and, I see a group of low levels in the city sewers. And I just jump down in there and I just start mixing things up for them and seeing where they take it. And then, an hour later, I jump somewhere else in the world and see what people are doing and I mix it up on them.
Yeah, that is like the most, I think the most critical thing you can do to make your world feel dynamic is have your DM staff involved and just doing little things.
Things, I agree. Little things are good when it comes to DMs. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's critical. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have a DM, big, long DM session with the group that goes for a specific purpose. But, like Brian was just saying, you go down in the sewers, you kind of hang out in the corner and make yourself, nobody knows the DM is there. And he just kind of makes little tweaks that make it different. That's very exciting for me.
I used to do it a lot.
On the way out of the sewer, it's different than on the way in. That's very cool for me. Those are the kind of things I look for.
You mean when the group is going just for a dungeon raid and when suddenly something happens that it's not simple a dungeon raid, it's already a DM event, but you just don't know it's one.
To do that stealth DMing too, where you're not... where sort of try to see how long you can make things interesting or different without people actually catching on to the fact that there's a DM changing the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That is very cool. Because you don't really realize it until a bunch of time goes by.
Right.
And then you kind of start suspecting. I think there's a DM around here somewhere that's kind of following us around and tweaking things. Because I don't remember that monster being here last time.
Yeah, I always love that. Because I'll be on, I like common style myself. I adopt that myself when I get in. And I'll be screwing around with something, and then I'll see somebody saying, "Yep, it's Brian or Kama on." They know it's something's going down, but they'll know for sure.
Well, my favorite is when I log in and people start getting nervous.
Yeah, we have players who actually they'll type in on the shot line, hide bodies under bed and stuff like that. Looks other way, that kind of stuff. They see us logging in. There's typically nervousness.
You guys on NWN2 can't hide from your players.
Well, yeah, actually we can't. Well, you can, but the problem is there's people who constantly watch the players' chat box.
Yep.
I have it disabled where you can see when a game master comes in or out, but they constantly, I'm on the server like 10 seconds. Hi, Brian, how's it going? I'm like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even fully logged in, it's the loading bar was still on my screen, and already, when I finally can see my screen, there's already like 3 shouts and a handful of tells saying hi,
That's funny, because I never say hello to the DMs, even if I know they're there. I let them say hello to me.
Well, that's, and that's great, because the bottom line is, we like to keep things open for the players. When we're talking about rules at the beginning, we have a very light rule set. I mean, yeah, we have the basic stuff that you should and shouldn't do or can't do, but... as far as like resting and all the other stuff, or even interacting with DMs and stuff like that. I mean, there's no requirement to, get sucked up to a DM or you know, we try to greet everybody, and, you know, when I first see a player, you know, I try to talk to them, or, you know, hey, how's it going, type of thing, and, you know, but we don't, you don't have to do that to get along in Rolls Training. We don't have a favoritism to the one player over another, you know, so it really helps, too, because players don't have to worry about, they don't have to have the anxiety, oh, should I say hi, or should I, you know, this, that, and the other. You're not going to get an extra +5 sword or something because you talked to us, you know?
Even though you may think you can.
Exactly.
Although you may end up with a lap full of giant spiders if you pester the DM too many times.
Just
I
spiders?
Keep on my avatar, because people always ask me for boots of speed and that sort of thing, because we banned all that permahaste and all those sorts of loot in the world. Mm-hmm. So anytime anyone knows I'm around, they ask me for a set of boots of speed, and so I have on my avatar something that's labeled boots of speed, but it's -4 to all stats and casts slow once a day. So you're like, hey, no problem. I got one right here for you.
that's pretty cruel, man.
Speaking of which, before I forget, that's perfect lead into this. We had some players that were, you know, violating the repeat pickpocketing. Okay, so what I did was, you know, we caught the guy doing it, and, you know, he met it and everything like that. We warned him, but he kept doing it again and again. So I said, I'll fix this.
Excuse me, I don't want to interrupt, but I just wondered, what are the pickpocketing rules on your server?
We have, you're in a PvP area, which, you know, a good bit of server is PvP. You can pickpocket somebody, but if repeated pickpocket attempts where you basically pick the guy dry, like over 2 or 3 times, you can't do that. It's considered a harassment to the other player because you're destroying their experience if you can blow them out of the water. And because a lot of players don't understand that stuff, you know, they don't understand how they're getting pickpocketed. All of a sudden, they know their inventory is empty.
Do you require them to set hostile?
Yeah, we do require them to set hostile, but they don't always do it. Though. See, that's part of the players not, you know, following the procedures, you know, properly. And it gets hard as heck to keep on everybody. But anyhow, we fixed this guy. We made an item called the Pick Peruvian. And what it does, it gives minus 10 or 20, Paul. What was it, 20?
It's like 25.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Whatever the max was for the skill, minus 25 to sleight of hand. Cursed item. You couldn't get rid of it. I dropped like 2 or 3 on the guy. Yeah, it was cute. It was real cute.
You evil.
See, I don't have a lot of tolerance for those griefer type of guys. If I was running it, I would just boot the guy and just not let him come back.
Well, we had a couple situations with some players that we had to ban. I mean, thankfully, I haven't had to deal with levels of tool baggery at that level yet with my player base. But, you know, there have been a few people here and there that, you know, where I've had to deal with them. So, but that's been very far few in between, thankfully.
Yeah, I agree. Those kind of people have never been real prevalent in Neverwinter Nights games. There are usually, or in the early days, there were more, but, you know, a lot of that I haven't seen in my experience over the years.
Most people have moved on that are like that. I mean, we've had a lot of people over since 02, 03 come through the server and be really difficult like that, but eventually we tend to get rid of them pretty quickly.
Yeah,
of course, in the early days, one of the problems was that there were more ways for them to come in and screw around with you, and less ways to keep them out.
Right.
So now that things are a lot more mature, it's certainly a lot better than it was. But I think the fact that there just aren't that many of them around anyway is a good thing, I guess.
Well, yeah, I have to agree with this totally. I mean, I think, you know, my experience, the ones that I've had to deal with, you know, you try to give people, like, you know, a chance to, you know, say, okay, hey, look, you know, I'm not going to do that and whatever. But what I find is the more lenient you are, well, the more they do it and the more they honk off your good players. And it sets a bad precedent. So, I mean, I try to, you know, give them a little bit of an opportunity to work it through. But, you know, not no more. If anyone does that, you know, I make sure that, you know, I sure I process them as soon as I possibly can. Brent Furch, we have a head DM who handles all that stuff, so that's what we, you know, we give him specifically to read. So if people get him on the excrement list, they ain't going to be, he could take care of them.
I imagine you also, you treat newer players a little bit different than the vets. Because the vets should know the rules, but the new players don't always, you know, depends how you have your rules. That's something I'll point out a little bit later about the rule, mm-hmm. the server rules, and having your players learn them. Mm-hmm. You know, most worlds, what they'll do is they'll put a big sign or a whole row of signs in the first room you come to.
Uh-huh.
You know, and if you don't spend 45 minutes reading through all that stuff, then before you get to go play, then you won't know the rules. And I'm not sure that every new player that comes to a module reads through all that stuff. Well, I know I don't.
Two of them do.
Yeah. So my suggestion would be to integrate those rules into the game more. You know, have a sign in some place, you know, that they're going to be passing by, that they'll go, they'll think it's something to do with the game, and they'll go over and you can have, oh, by the way, did you know this rule? Or, you know, maybe have an NPC that tells them, oh, by the way, if you do this.
I like that.
That way you can catch those people that don't sit there for 45 minutes at the beginning reading everything, and you can, you know, educate them as they go along a little more. I think that would be better.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
plus it lets you get into the world faster. One of the big drawbacks I had with my little excursion a few months ago was that every server I went into, I had to spend an hour getting organized and ready to go and finding out everything I had to do, you know, and that was a kind of a bummer, you know.
Yeah.
It took a lot of the time of the play out of it. So I would suggest that more. Another place you could put it is on the load screens. You know, they have that hint.
The little hints, yeah.
Yeah. Right there is such a great place to put game, to put server rules. And I don't see anybody doing that.
I know we've got a pile of them over the years that have grown up. And so what we try to do is cut down to, I just linked to it, cut down to a very short summary. Those are all rules. Bam, right there. And then, as people run into other cases, so, for example, if you want to end up spying on a guild, well, we've got a you know, a page of rules. Here are the things you have to follow if you're going to spy on a guild, so you don't screw people over. You got to follow these. And but if you're never involved in that, then you never need to care about that particular rule. Yeah. Or you know, if you're playing a changeling, here are the forms that are allowed to talk, and here are the forms that aren't. If you're not,
I think it should be in the world, though. You know, I noticed that you just sent me a link to a rules page that's on the web. When I was checking out these servers, a lot of them had forms and stuff. I never went to a single one of them.
Right, exactly. You know?
I didn't go out there and even check them out because I was just wanting to check out the worlds and see which one is good, which one is bad and stuff. So I think those rules are good to have on the website. I mean, you got to have them in your website. If you're going to take the time to build a website, you might as well put them there. But they absolutely must be in the game if you're going to be enforcing them and imposing penalties on your players for breaking them.
Yeah, you can see these five sentences or six sentences on an NPC when you first log in. But we don't want to inflict an hour's worth of rule reading on somebody before they start playing. That would be a bit of a mess.
Right. You know, a lot of the servers I went to had that.
Yeah, that's a bad user experience. Yeah, definitely.
And we do a very hard and fast three strikes and you're out on Atlas. First time you get a warning, and we are very polite about it. Here's what you did wrong. This is what you're supposed to do right. Please don't do it again. And second time, you make that mistake. We jail your character's vault for a week, so you can't log in for a week. And if you do it again, third time you're out. That's it.
Uh-huh.
See, that's great. That's the kind of administration I wish more people did.
Yeah, there's no favoritism, there's no chances to be a friend of the DM, there's no anything. It's three strikes and you're out, that's it. We record everything, of course, on the team side in a watch list, so everybody knows everything that's going on the team, and yeah, it's the only way to be fair, I think.
Well, I wish I had something like that several years ago when I played the Neverwinter Nights 1 on one of the servers. I just got myself to a point when I got griefed by some of the players that I managed to persuade the DMs to arrest me, not the players. I was in a jail cell for 1 week, and everyone thought I left the game except the jailers who played the jailers, the PCs who played the jailers, and the DMs. Oh. Like, oh, I thought you left. No, I was in jail. But yes, griefing and rules are rules are rules. But we covered one of the topics that we had to speak about. But what else? You mentioned the griefing and everything. I don't know how to put it.
I was going to say, you know, with griefing, as a DM, I come down hard on players that I catch griefing others. Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, the first time, it's a pretty much a harsh warning. You do this again, you're burned. And the next time I catch them doing it, you know, there's no warning, there's no nothing, man. You know, I just, boom, strip all their XP, empty their inventory, hey, have fun. You know, and if I catch them doing it again, it's, you know, I go right to our head DM or right back to Brian and say, hey, this is what's going on. This is, you know, this is a problem player. You've been repeatedly punished for this. Ban them. Boot them. Get rid of them. They're destroying the you know,
the fun
for other people.
Right on. That's the way they should be treated.
Yeah.
In fact, I created. I never ran a PW, but I created this want. You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but if you there's a command that allows you to make the PC like kind of fly up into the air. It's called escape or something like that. Anyway, it makes them like fly up in the air off the screen. I'm sure you've seen the animation.
Yeah, it's on the
Superman,
GameFi.
Superman. You can send them up there. You can make them fly, do the Superman fly up off the screen, and then leave them up there, and they can't move, they can't do nothing. They're just like stuck in
space in limbo.
It's a good one. If you're looking to hammer on a griefer, it pretty much takes them out of the game.
I don't know. I'm rather fond of taking their armor and their weapons away and then sending them to, like, the nastiest boss on the server. You know, they usually...
But then they get to play.
Yeah, no, then they get to die.
Well, I mean, yeah, they get to watch their guy die, though. Yeah, I think it's better if you're going to hammer a griefer to just take him out. You know, lock him out, make it so he can't do squat, but sit there and watch the screen. You know, he spent $50 on his game, and he went in and caused trouble with it, and now you can lock him out, and he can't do nothing.
It's just like sending him to limbo.
Exactly.
Griefing is supposed to be an out-of-character problem. I mean, if your characters are giving other characters hell, that's legitimate roleplay within the game world. If you have a player that's causing trouble for other players...
Yeah,
that's an out of character issue, and I always think you should deal with that in an out of character way. We have an immortal jail, so we just hop players to the jail, and if they give us trouble or argue with us, then they don't get hopped out. So that's just where they are. There's no exit transition when they log in. That's where they are. And if it becomes an issue, then like I said, we'll jail their BIC on the server vault.
And that's what you do for someone who like logs in and goes around, starts trying to kill all the NPCs and bashing on level one guys and stuff.
Our first time will be a warning. We pull them out of the mod, hop them up to the immortal area, and say, look, this is a roleplay server. You're not
really,
you know, running around destroying NPCs is not appropriate. Going around briefing noobs, it's not appropriate.
I don't know if I'd even warn a guy like that.
I mean,
everybody knows they're running around. Everybody knows that running around and killing level one guys when you're level 40 is inappropriate griefing. If I found a guy doing that, he'd be gone right off the bat.
I've seen that. A Neverwinter 2 persistent world. I logged in, and, you know, as Spool was saying, that, you know, griefing should be an OOC thing. But, you know, it gets confused, especially in a, like, you get these level 30s running around, you know, on a hardcore RP server. It took them, you know, 6 to 8 months to become level 30. And they run around, they think they're God. And, you know, they hang out right outside of town. Here come a couple of level ones, fresh to the server, been there 10 minutes. And the next thing you know, they're hijacking them for everything they have. All right. And then kill them. Now, when you got new players, whether, you know, you don't know when they first log in, you know, level one. Okay, well, everybody starts there. You don't know if this is somebody who just installed the game, has never played an RPG before in their life, or if it's a vet hopping from server to server.
Yeah.
All right. And, you know, for the new, the genuinely new people to the game, an experience like that turns them off to the world, to the game, right there.
It's just not fun. It's not fun at all.
Exactly.
That's I prefer having the level 3 guys try and waylay the level 30 characters on the road. I've been doing that with my alt since I rolled him, since the day I rolled him, trying to rob people. And I have a whole lot more fun trying to convince people not to kill me. After I just tried to jump them on the highway.
You know, some places, you run into this a lot, too. And a lot of times I put this into the griefing category. You get people who think evil means stupid evil.
Yeah.
All right? And they just run around to make an ass of themselves, you know, and harass people, you know, and they say, well, I'm evil.
Those are the guys I'm talking about.
Those are the guys that, you know, they start, I catch them mouthing off like that, you know, intimidating other players, this, that, and the other thing. And those are the guys that turn around and get jumped by, like, 12 epic monsters.
Yeah.
It is, in that situation, time to pull out the city guard and show them the consequences of evil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have the elite gun.
That's what paladins are for, right there.
No, just a question, Kama. What a hardcore server would let where players get to level 30 in 6 months? I never played on such a server.
Yeah, that's a long time.
No, I was playing on a server. In 6 months, I barely got to level 6.
What server was that?
Well, Haze, Daggerford.
Daggerford is known for its slow leveling.
It was. I don't know if it's still running or not. And I do not need the alpha one. There was a server Daggerford way back several years ago. The maximum level I ever got on that server was level 4, and it was after 7 months of play.
Wow.
Yeah, we try to strike a balance between that. Yeah, I think we expected you to get I think we expect you to get 20th in 6 months if you play every day. Approximately, somewhere between 15th and 20th in 6 months if you play every day.
Well, that's a good count.
Yeah, but we front-load the first 5 levels very, very heavily, so you could zip through those in a month, and then it slows way down after that.
When I used to make the servers, I simply give the free first levels to the player. When I'm up till level 15, it was an easy joyride, and after it, it's kind of hard to find something interesting without a group to play with.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, there's something right there that I wish more servers had, was when you get up to the higher levels, there's some solo quests that you can do. Because I don't always play with the group.
There are, but
you know, a lot of groups, they're going to be there all night. Like I pointed out earlier, I don't always have a lot of time to play, so I kind of want to pop in. And it's hard to do soloing on a server where, you know, once you hit epic or even short of epic, you know, around 16 level or so, there isn't a whole lot to do that you can survive without without being in a group.
No,
it would be nice if more servers did more to support soloists.
X, I didn't say you cannot survive. I just said it will be more fun with a group because it will take less time to get through it.
That is how Avalis is. Once you crack about 25, unless you're trolling in the mid-level dungeons still, you're going to need at least one other guy, two other guys to go with you. And the really epic dungeons, you need a party to get through.
Yeah.
It's not...
Which is fine, but like I said, it'd be nice if there was a solo option.
It's hard to balance, but I can see where it'd be attractive. It is hard to balance though because
you got those $100 dungeons coming in, so maybe
take
one of those and turn them into a solo job.
Maybe somebody will build us a solo dungeon.
I think the biggest key there is, and this is something that I mean, like I said, I was talking about before, but the thing that I'd like to do and I'm working on is actually having our spawning system, our trigger spawning system, actually spawn the appropriate level of mods for a soloist. So if one person comes through, you have your baseline, but it actually scales for larger parties so that if one person comes through, yeah, it's going to be difficult, but it's definitely doable as long as they're decent builders. You know, you can build a decent character, you can get through it by yourself. So if you like to run something by yourself, or if you want to progress through the game by yourself, that the game will scale with you, not just the different monsters, but I'm talking about different amounts of, so that it'll scale up and down depending on the size of the party that enters the area.
Yeah, that's ideal.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard without scripting.
I mean, that's all done through, scripting, which, like I said, most of it I already have in place. It's just a matter of just coming up with the right setup and, what's easiest on the server as far as efficiency is concerned, memory usage, and those types of things, and cleanup. I got it pretty much hammered out. That's a great model to be used by Persistent Worlds for specifically the purpose you talk about because, I get what you're saying from players over and over again. I have probably a long laundry list from players say, hey, it'd be great, if we had some more solo areas that, when I want to jump in, not that I want to play a single player module online, but I'd like to actually have opportunity to do some more of your product, by going through myself. Right. And, I get a lot of that.
I do a lot of soloing at low levels, until I hit about level 5 or 6, because the main reason I do that is because on most servers these days, the people that you meet when you're there are all vets. They all know everything about the world, and it kind of kills my immersion and a lot of the fun for me of like I said earlier, exploring the map. When you join a party and everybody already knows where to go and you just kind of follow the leader. It's more exciting for me to solo in those early stages. And I don't usually party up until I hit about level 6 or 7 or 8 or somewhere in through there.
Or join with a group with a couple of other guys who also
never been here. That's actually the best way to do it.
I think so, yeah.
It's hard to find them.
Well, what I usually do before I enter some dungeon into a world, I used to go through it solo with my most weakest character. Well, at least try to. Then I know if the area is good enough for one player or the group.
Yeah, you mean for testing?
Yes, testing. Well, I tested alone. Yeah. When I tested with several, how do you call them? Volunteers? What the hell? Chickens. I used to call them chickens, then I changed it to volunteers. Well. it used to be fun to take 3 or 4 players out of the game. Say, hey guys, you wanna help me test a new area, OCC, out of character? And I never had somebody say no. Because I usually let them keep the XP after the testing without any problem.
That's all gone for us. We've got a separate QA server with an identical set of the modules. that we load up one at a time in an identical database. So if whenever we're testing something, it goes onto the QA server first, and then we validate and release stuff before beforehand. Okay. But the QA team does get to see new systems and new areas before everybody else. They get a first look before the rest of the server gets to see them or play with them.
So the QA people are players.
Yeah. Yes, we have a staff member that manages QA, and then of course we have the builders and coders and stuff on the team. But the actual bug testers are all players who've volunteered to test new systems for us on the QA server.
Yep, we have the mirrored setup that you have. Cool.
It's really effective. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. Well, it's huge. Because right now we have a beta of our server up right now. We're going to low magic pretty soon here as part of the storyline. And we did tons of rescaling to our world. And I fired up our beta server, beta database, just like you have. And we have a long list of players, long-time players that have signed up for beta. And boy, are they are phenomenal at finding stuff.
Sure, they know the world better than you do in a lot of ways.
Yeah, really. I mean, I built most of it, but I can't remember every detail I stuck in here and there. And then they come up with stuff that's totally off the wall that I wasn't even thinking about. And I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
Gonna fix it. And...
Well, I rarely had that problem after 300 areas. And to think I was building alone, but that's a lie. Okay.
Yeah, something else we don't have is we have a staff. We have two or three guys doing coding, half a dozen builders who do this various types of work now and again, or they make the occasional contribution, and then the QA manager. And none of the DMs are involved with the process at all.
It's a good idea. DM should be taking care of the game, not of the moral of the creation.
Yes.
Well, unless you're going to destroy a village. Okay.
See, we have a different model. I mean, we definitely have a different model here. I mean, we have all of a Calm, especially. We have all of our DMs are module builders, and Calm and I are the two scripters. So, I mean, we all do have a hand to play as far as the development of the world. Not everybody develops full time, but they have interest in building certain areas of the server that really interest them and that they want to put some of their creative talent to. And I haven't had any problems with that at all. Actually, it's been a great success for our team. I guess different teams have different things that they need to do, but it really does work for us, though, at least.
Well, I think builders and DM, when you build in DM, it kind of helps you to get oriented in the world. I used to have a DM team, but didn't know which areas we can use and cannot use just because we didn't explore them much without me. I usually get stuck, logged in as players and played with the players exploring the areas that make new and played until I log in, and when we log out, come in and start to ask, well, head DM and head DM that, can we do that and can we do that? Problem.
The thing too, I mean, I think the other difference is that all of our DMs that we've brought on, there have been players that have played on the server 6 or more months and that have contributed greatly as players. They knew the server very well to begin with. And, I think that's really what helped out a lot. The ones that didn't start up with me, I mean, we brought in like 4 or 5 new people from the player base, including Kama, who've been, that was the greatest thing we could ever have done because they knew the server, they had the desire. And I think that makes a big difference, that the more experience they have with the server beforehand.
What are you doing, Max?
What's that?
Are you sharpening your axe?
Oh, yes, I'm always keeping that thing sharp. Got to keep these builders in line. Go out to play on their servers, and they need, someone needs to hack on some of these guys. Teach them. So, yeah, I keep it sharp as always.
Well, the next question is about scripters. Not question, the topic. What do you think How much would the scripter could contribute to the world without being a builder? Well, just scripting.
Huge amount.
How much does scripting... Is that the question?
How much does scripting affects the world?
Sorry.
How much it should affect and how much it should be visible and not visible?
I'd say it affects it about as much as the player does.
Yeah, that is...
Up. I mean,
just
you
your spell hooking. Yeah, I mean, good gracious. I think you have to have scripters.
Did Trey come up with that?
Who are not.
I think it's useful
for them to not be building. And rather than focusing on building systems, rather than building areas, and let them collaborate with somebody. I mean, yeah, spell hooking, half of the big system draws for Avalis have nothing to do with areas. They're like companion training, or the advanced magic stuff that we did, or the barbarian rage system alterations, or the loot drops, or the crafting system. I think it's huge. And completely independent of the building that you have people doing.
The scripting is what brings all the behavior to life and makes it unique to a show.
I can't agree. It's full enough. Absolutely. Not only does it do the stuff that he was talking about, but the crafters and the spell hooking and all the stuff that he's done, and so have we. There's other stuff too. I mean, I use scripting for a lot of environmental stuff. I mean, like for meteors striking through the air, smacking random places throughout the area. you name it. Lightning strikes. I have a bunch of lightning like effects and area effects. It's so important. I mean,
all that stuff. Ambient, hot damage in the fire plane. That's
even just the ambient NPCs that are hanging out in the towns and stuff.
Yeah,
are usually. The more scripting you put on things like that, the more unique and interesting the world is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You can't get along with the standard BioWare stuff out of the box. You cannot do it.
Nope.
I still think there is not enough clothes, even with the CAP, but alright, that's me.
There was a lot of good stuff there. There was a lot of stuff that kind of made me cringe periodically. But there was also some stuff there that I could say, okay, all right, I'm cool with that.
I'm intrigued, and I'm ready for part two.
Cool. So do y'all have anything else before we sign off?
No, I think it's been a quiet night in the dragon den here this last week.
Are you over your cold?
Oh, well, at least I'm not sneezing and coughing and hacking and carrying on like I was last week. So, yes! And we're supposed to get snow again this weekend, so...
Yeah, we're supposed to get another ice storm this week.
Yeah. Yippee! I love the winter, but then again, we could be in Montana.
All right, until next time.
Get in game.
Level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2010.
It'd be some blib.
Excuse you there.
Edit that out.
Did you lose your train of thought?
I did. I just was. I was reading here, and all of a sudden, it was like, whoop, gone. Anyway,